All right, we have audio on. It's so clear I can't even hear that there's a microphone amplification. Ah, there it comes. All right. Hello, welcome to TechEd Australia 2011. My name is Andrew Ahrensing. My role at Microsoft is a solution architect out of our services organization, MCS. I'm based in the Chicago area, and I cover our UC solutions for our public sector customers. So that would be in the U.S., education, state and local government, as well as our federal sector, civilian defense, and intelligence. So also with me is Michael McLean from Polycom.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, my name is Michael McLean. I'm the sales engineer manager for Polycom ANZ. So I look after all our technical resources. We've got a couple in the front, so designing solutions from UC all the way up to telepresence.
Thank you. So this morning what we're going to talk about is our audio, video, and web conferencing experience inside of Link. We're going to spend probably 10, 15 minutes this morning giving you a background and some of the whys and hows. The goal is to spend about a half hour actually walking through a live demo. The unfortunate news is I got a text this morning that said we may have internet access issues during the day. Since all of our stuff is live off of our conferencing MCU, we have some stuff we can show you without that, but knock on wood, hopefully we won't have any internet access issues today as we would not be able to show you some of the features there. But like we said, first of all, we're going to show you this concept, right, of audio, video, web conferencing, some of the topical reasons behind that. After we walk through the demo, we'll actually walk you through the architecture portion of what's happening behind the scenes, as everything from scheduling a web conference or an audio conference to actually how that audio, video, or web conference is mixed and handled, what the signaling paths are, what the media paths would be for those different modalities. We're also going to cover some of the big questions that a lot of you may have is, what are some of the bandwidth requirements when I turn on something like audio or especially video or web conferencing or desktop sharing, for example? So we've got the numbers for you for planning and sizing, what an infrastructure would entail for deploying something. We also have a summary slide at the end. Some of you may say, well, that's a great story. I like the concept of Link, but I can't go deploy the server infrastructure now. We have a comparison table that will show you how you can, what the capability set is on Link Online today. So the Link in Office 365 is now shipping and available, and we'll show you what the parity difference is between the on-premise version of Link and the Office 365 version. If we go back in time, if we go all the way back in time, right, back in the, around, I think it was 97 or 98, Microsoft acquired a company that did IM SIP presence type corporate communications based out of Boston, Massachusetts. We turned that product into Exchange 2000 conferencing server at the time. So we took this concept of real-time communications. We said we wanted to add that in. We already have this mail communications product, Exchange. We'll kind of merge the products together. What we found out is it's really not quite a, it's different styles of communication. Email is not time sensitive, right? You can send it. It sits in the recipient's inbox. They'll reply when they have time. But instant messaging is a different nature. You're expecting the other person to be online and available at the time you send that message and for them to respond within a much shorter period of time. We also realize that the future of communications is going to develop around this concept of the split between both a non-real-time communications and real-time communications. And so we decided at that point to take that the real-time communications component or RTC component and split that into a separate group at Microsoft. So that became the RTC group. You saw that split with the release of Live Communication Server in 2003 and 2005. That code base continued to be added and extended, and we realized that we could do things like start to have integration with voice, add video, for example, and do things like web sharing or application conferencing on top of that real-time communications platform. So we made a decision back then that we will continue to enhance and extend this code base over time, mostly native, but possibly via some acquisitions as well. You saw Placeware, for example, for the conferencing component, and things like Parlano for the group chat component. But build out a real unified communications or a UC component around real-time communications. The first real iteration around voice was OCS 2007. We had some capabilities there to do things like audio and PSTN integration for the first time. With R2, we significantly enhanced that. So in 2009 timeframe, right, we started to add in audio conferencing and doing basic desktop sharing to really enhance that RTC component. At that time, we still had the separate client for Placeware called Live Meeting. And so the Live Meeting client is what we used to do web conferences. But it was a little confusing for customers. Sometimes you would have an IM session and you would turn on application sharing or desktop sharing, as we called it at the time. Other times you would have a scheduled live meeting, for example, and you'd actually go in and people would join the live meeting. They'd have a different client, but they'd have functionality like a whiteboard and polling and larger meeting sizes, for example. What we found at Microsoft back in these days is we had approximately a 2-to-1 ratio of scheduled meetings to ad hoc meetings at the time we had the split in the client. So in the 2009 timeframe, approximately 2/3 of our meeting content was scheduled. You went and scheduled a meeting on live meeting. People then join at the scheduled time. And about 1/3 was ad hoc, where I'm having an IM conversation or a telephone call, and I decide to start sharing something or start to enhance or upgrade that meeting experience to add a different modality. With Link, we significantly enhanced, again, that product, right? So we took this RTC code base, and we went and added in that conferencing experience. We've significantly enhanced the dial-in audio conferencing experience to really try to offer parity with what you see in your third-party teleconference bridges, for example. We'll walk through a lot of that functionality, actually, inside of the demo. The second major piece of that is we've merged the client base. We no longer have a separate live meeting client for Link. You have a single Link client. That can be your desktop version of Microsoft Link. That can be an attendee client for someone outside of your organization that wants the full experience but doesn't have a Link license or the Link client. Or that could be somebody coming in with a Link web app. So they just have a Firefox, a Safari, or Internet Explorer browser, and they want to join your meeting but see that audio or video type experience. What we found by merging those clients back in is it's much simpler for end users to actually understand. I can just take the basic IM session or an audio call, and I can very rapidly add or remove different modalities, such as a specific application on my desktop, or sharing out my second monitor, for example, or adding video, possibly even integrating that with a partner solution to bring in a conference room or other existing VTC or telepresence type scenario. Remember I talked about that 2-to-1 ratio of scheduled to ad hoc? Now, in 2011, we've actually seen that number reverse. Only about 1/3 of our actual collaboration sessions now are scheduled. The other 2/3 are ad hoc, meaning that someone has taken that initial communication stream and has decided to go ahead and add some context to that, whether that be sharing an application, sharing their desktop, adding a video stream, for example, or somehow extending just an ad hoc conversation into something that's richer and has more detail around it. Going forward, right, our goal is to continue taking all of these capabilities you see in the Link on-premise version and extending and augmenting our Office 365 platform. The feature parity is not there today, but we have a roadmap for bringing and incorporating those features into that Office 365 platform. We look at the basics, right? First of all, obviously with Link, you're still going to have that IM and presence capability. All of our concept of RTC really revolves around the concept of presence. We think that if you know the presence of the person you're trying to reach, you'll have a better way of choosing which communication method to use when you try to talk to or communicate with the person. If they're busy or in a meeting, you'll probably try a written form, such as an IM, which they may be able to answer in a room full of other people. If they're green or available, you can try a video session or a voice call, right? So having that presence, and especially having that presence available in your day-to-day applications, such as Microsoft Office and Outlook or Word, for example, or on a SharePoint site, or in your existing line of business applications, your CRM or ERP tool, allows you to see and rapidly choose that appropriate communication type for the other people in the that you would be working with. We also have the concept of voice and video, so we've done a lot of work really to make Link that PBX-capable solution. So now we have a software-capable tool that really delivers on that enterprise voice capability or skill set. As you look down right, there's a conference in the U.S. used to be called VoiceCon, is now Enterprise Connect, but it's typically where you go for voice-type solutions. At VoiceCon and Enterprise Connect every year, they have a sample UC RFP. And that UC RFP is meant to give organizations some assistance of if you are going to replace your communication system, these are the characteristics that you should look for, right? So ask your different vendors what capability they have in each one of these topic areas, how well is all of that integrated. And you can see that we've made some significant changes in our RTC platform, or Microsoft Link, over that time period. Back in 2007, we could only meet about 60% of what the VoiceCon RFP described, right, or what the vision typically for an enterprise UC tool. With Microsoft Link, we're up into the 90% range, significantly higher again than R2, which was only at 78. So now we're seeing that we have that, not just the existing presence and IM and web sharing capabilities, but we've really done a lot of work around the voice characteristics inside of Link to bring that PBX-type functionality into Link itself. The other one, right, the most common scenario that we see internally, the one that people use Link heavily with, I myself spend probably 2 to 5 hours a day in different Link calls. I'm on Link when I'm not inside of an office or at a customer site, on the phone or in a meeting with a group of people, but via Link. I have a little Polycom CX600 phone that I can join from. I don't even have to have my computer booted up, or if I have to reset it, right. I have a voice over IP phone that connects me easily. But most of my time is then spent with this concept of application sharing. We have 3 to 5 of us who need to go over an RFP response, a statement of work, a presentation we have to deliver somewhere. And it's very easy for us to just have that on someone's screen. One person is editing that. The other 2, 3, or 4 are providing some feedback or some description of what should be changed right inside of that document. The collaboration experience is very easy. It's simple. Everyone uses it from both our technical side, our technical people, as well as some of our non-technical folks, right? So we're talking a salesperson or admin assistant or somebody else. the non-technical sales staff. There are some sales folks that don't have that. They're not out deploying. They're selling the technology, but it's easy for them to use as well. So also with Link, right, missing in that OCS R2 desktop sharing conferencing piece was the concept of whiteboarding and polling and other aspects. We've heard that comment and feedback, and so now you have that capability inside of that Link conference or the Link meeting as well. And then finally, there's the conference management aspect. It's one thing to have a system that is capable of producing and having or hosting, for example, an audio conference or a video conference or a web sharing conference. But from the Link side, you have all that integrated with a single application. So one client allows you to experience all of those modalities. The second piece is, from a scheduling perspective, most of us use Outlook as our primary mail and collaboration tool, and so we wanted to have a tight integration inside of Outlook for the scheduled meeting experience as well. And we'll show you what that Outlook scheduling experience is, as well as how you'd address things such as maximum meeting size or augment that with a different meeting experience inside of your organization if you have one of these conference rooms or telepresence type solutions that you'd like to integrate your Link solution with. With that, let's talk a little bit more then about the concept of extending the desktop video into that room experience. One little quick highlight before I introduce Michael and let him go over what the Polycom side looks like is, from the Microsoft side, we are focused on the desktop interaction piece of the video experience. So what we've done with Link is add things like HD video to enable that richer collaborative video experience at the desktop level. What we do not produce at Microsoft is the room-based systems. So if you have a conference room or a telepresence-type solution, we look to our partner community and partner organizations to provide a capability there. What we found in the last couple years is that the ideal scenario is actually a hybrid or a blend between both of those. We don't see a significant amount of peer-to-peer or desktop-based video conferencing, but we see a lot of requests for, I have 6 people in a conference room, and I want to add Andrew in Chicago into that video conference. And so what we've realized is that is the typical or the use case scenario our customers have came to us with. With Link now, we've done a significant amount of work to simplify how we can take a user with desktop video and add them into an existing conference room or VTC-type infrastructure. And so with that, we have Polycom here to talk to you a little bit about their conference room infrastructure and how that would integrate with Link.
Excuse me, Andrew. I think you just did my slides, but that's cool. So just a quick highlight or an overview of Polycom. We have, as Andrew was saying, we've got a very tight relationship with Microsoft in regards to their voice platform, in regards to Link and OCS, and we've got some specific devices purely made for Link. As Andrew said, he's got one of our devices at his desk, which is an IP phone, but you can better together that with your Link client and get click to call. And our traditional telepresence and room-based systems here on the right, tying that integration in there, and then our core infrastructure, which gives you the continuous presence or Hollywood Squares or Brady Bunch, depending on how you'd like to describe it. But the key thing to that, as Andrew said, is how do we actually get users to adopt it? Not just tech-savvy people, but actually people that are standard users or salespeople, as I call them. Where basically we want people from Exchange or Link to have a seamless approach into unified collaboration using video and desktop sharing. So just a quick show of hands. Who knows Polycom here or has heard of Polycom? Awesome. Okay. Bit of a shock. No, that's cool. So yeah, so basically our core infrastructure, there's two different things in regards to our integration with Link and OCS. To get that continuous presence flavour, excuse me, we actually have an RMX. Bear with me. We use our RMX platform, which is our core infrastructure, which actually gives you that value. We get that continuous presence. We can push content. We have traditional H323 and SIP users. It can be over IP or over ISDN. So we bind a lot of technologies, and it's our core piece that actually shows that. Just a quick comparison in regards to before we go into the demo. Microsoft themselves with Link have an AV MCU. One of the things that they actually do, though, is they do active switching. So if you've got more than two people in the call, you'll only actually see the last person to speak. So the challenge from a video perspective is we actually like to see everyone in the call. How many people have been on an audio call and you're in that call and then all of a sudden you press mute and you walk off for that hour, come back, and you've actually missed the whole point of that conversation? With video, with the actual value of continuous presence, you actually get to see those people. So if someone does take a phone call, starts to use a mobile and text, you can actually pull them back into the call, or a dazed and confused look, you can actually go back and ask them a question. So it's multi-purpose in the value of those presentations. We also scale, also with our Link environment, they scale up to 720p or high definition. Polycom actually, or traditional video conferencing, actually scales up to 1080p or full high definition. So being able to get a high definition call between a Polycom unit at 1080p into a bridge and get that rich experience, as well as getting traditional Link users as well as traditional video users over, for example, ISDN, giving that rich view. One of the key differentiators between us and our competition is Microsoft released their product call with the protocol called RTV, real-time video, and 3CP support, which gives you the ability to drag and drop and give you high definition. We've actually enabled this on our bridging infrastructure, so the RMX and core, so that's able to be done and it's free of charge, but also we enable that on our room-based system. So in the demonstration that Andrew will go through, we're actually able to right-click and call a room and actually get high definition, and you'll actually see during the call, if the internet's there, it'll go from a traditional video resolution of SIF, and then it will actually, on the fly, because of the RT video codec, actually go into a high definition call. Also, one of the things is, as Andrew was saying before, is we can have four or five people in a drag and drop, or you've got a buddy list that you're actually all collaborating with and having active speaker. We can actually drag and drop one of the room-based systems onto the Link MCU and collaborate just like you actually have a Link user at the desktop.
All right, who wants to see some of this in action versus just us talking about it with a couple of slides and screenshots? I made sure that my friends who said they'd assist with the demo were online and active. Our internet access is up as well. We should see it switch over to our second system here.
One?
No, it's two. There's the here's a video. Duplicate. I wasn't expecting that as the as the output. We gave you the heads up for the internet access issue. Try two again. It's fading.
Are you supposed to plug that in?
Oh.
It's all right. Layer one.
I have been doing more sales lately. Forgot the basics. Let's see what that looks like. I see the screen's refreshing. We should see a duplicate our screen infrastructure. And there we are. All right.
That's the demo,
step
guys.
One. the screen, the switching platform works. It was not a room issue. So first thing we're going to do is I had some IM conversations up here with a friend, Scott Schnoll, who will be delivering some exchange sessions here at TechEd in Australia. Scott is over in his hotel room right now and has kindly volunteered to participate in a live video. My peer in the U.S. Is a person named Robert Gillies. Robert Gillies, it's about 5 o'clock his time. He has, 5:30 his time. He has about 20 minutes, and he's going to participate as well. The reason I'm asking for two participants is that in Link, when we do a conference with somebody, when we do a IM session or an audio call or a video call with two people, the traffic flow on that signaling will flow from me back through Redmond to my pool infrastructure back to that end user. Media is going to flow peer-to-peer. So my call with Scott, both audio and video, should be pretty robust as that traffic is going to stay inside of Australia. But we really also want to give you the idea of what happens with Link when we do things such as cross the Pacific Ocean or add a significant amount of latency, some drop packets, etc. When we conference, both the signaling and the media will flow back to a conferencing MCU. For us, that's located back in the U.S. And so Robert Gillies, coming from the U.S., Scott Schnoll and I coming from here, all of our audio and video will be mixed in Redmond, so we have a stream going to Redmond and then flowing back to our individual endpoints. I also set myself to do not disturb. Since it is 5 o'clock back in the U.S., we would be getting some random interruptions otherwise from some of the other folks. So, anyway, I'm going to search for Scott Schnoll here. He's in my contact list, but I can't remember which one. So I'm going to bring up an IM session with Scott and say, hey, you know, how are you? Let's start a little random conversation with Scott. How is that latest CHM update coming along, right? I've got some questions about how he's doing, what's going on. And we can see, you saw earlier on, right, the little signaling that was setting up the channel. But now Scott's replying. He's there. Everything's sounding good. So, hey, Scott, I've got some questions. I'd like to maybe escalate this to an audio call, right? So I just click on the call button. It's very easy for me to do that. And I can take an IM conversation, and I can turn that into an audio call with Scott very rapidly. Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I was also talking to the room at the same time, so I apologize if I was in the middle of a sentence when we got connected there.
Oh, well, hello, everyone.
Hey. Is everyone here going to attend Scott's sessions on Exchange? Also, in the UC track, we've had some, thanks to all of you, we put a lot of work into it, but we've been able to be the number one track the past couple years in both Australia and New Zealand. So I think, Scott, you're working on some great content as well, right?
Absolutely.
Trying to keep that number one status? Excellent.
Absolutely.
So there's an audio call with Scott and I. As we said, signaling's going back to Redmond. Audio is going directly over from here at the conference center to an ISP back down to Scott's hotel over there. But Scott and I have some questions, and we probably want to talk to Mr. Robert Gillies as well. So at this point, we're going to invite somebody else to this conversation. So let's invite Robert Gillies. I see he's busy, but we'll go ahead and add him in as well. And so now we see that I very easily added a third participant. So I changed from a peer-to-peer call to a conference call by adding somebody in. I can do that with the add list. I could also have dragged Robert over from the buddy list into this conversation. And the modality that Robert's there, first you saw him join the IM conversation with the little, the laser point here? The IM side, and then as his audio bridge came up, you also saw his icon there. Mr. Gillies, are you out there in Alabama?
I am.
Hey, welcome to Australia.
You're good on evening.
Pardon?
Good evening.
I guess there's a little latency there. Yeah, good evening. I think it's Monday for you though, right?
It is.
We're calling you from the future over here. It's Tuesday morning from us.
What is it, like next Thursday?
It's Wednesday morning.
Oh, sorry, Wednesday
morning. It's Wednesday morning.
Thanks, Scott. It's actually Wednesday morning here. It's hard to remember in the which day it is. But now we have an audio conference, right, with both Robert and Scott actively participating in that session. Hey, Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit about the weather? Or do you guys see any of that hurricane over there? We'd just like for them to hear your audio quality.
The hurricane missed us here in Alabama. It went right up the coast, so we didn't even get any rain or anything here.
That's good to hear. Glad you guys are all okay over there.
Thank you.
In this call, I also have the we have some great internet access actually here today. Knock on wood that stays up for the demo. But you see the little the cell phone coverage icon, right? What that's going to do is highlight if we have some network issues. If we're dropping packets, have high latency, for example, something outside of the ordinary that would actually start to impact the audio or possibly the video experience as we add that later. So we're trying to surface or give that to users. We'll actually go up and add some additional latency and drop packets later on inside of this experience. First thing that what I'm going to do, though, is let's say that Scott's over there at his hotel and Scott has some internet access issues. And all of a sudden, well, first of all, I'm going to show you one thing that my favorite thing is. In an audio conference now, you have the capability to mute attendees, right? And so if you hear that person, Scott, can you just do some typing on your keyboard in the background and see if that
comes
through?
Sure, typing, 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 typing.
Yeah, it's really annoying, right? So I'm going to go ahead and cut that off because I'm really annoyed at that constant background noise when you have 10 people on the call and you can hear it coming through. The reason I knew that was Scott, well, he said typing, but I would actually see, you can see the little speaking icon on the phone. Those are people who are transmitting audio. So I can see quickly in the list who's sending audio in their stream and go ahead and put that person on mute so they don't interrupt that call or that audio experience for the rest of us. But also, let's say that for some reason Scott's internet access drops, right? And Scott actually is ejected from the conversation or would drop politely in this case, right? We actually went ahead and ejected him. But we really need Scott's audio. Now, I happen to know that Scott went and bought a SIM card in Australia, and so he has an Australian phone number and a cell phone. And so I'm going to go ahead and add him back in with his cell phone number. So I'm going to do the same invite, but instead of calling Scott from Link, I'm actually going to put Scott's Australian cell phone in here and go ahead and select that. Link, in this case, is actually going to dial Scott's cell phone or whatever phone number I put into that and add him back into the conference. So I don't have to text him the conference coordinates and have him dial in, enter a PIN, enter a passcode, etc. It's just going to go ahead and dial Scott and add him into the equation. Ah, and we're getting a little bit of notification that we have some network quality issues there. Hey, Scott, you there?
Hello.
Yeah, audio quality is not quite as good, but... Yeah. Hey, what SIM provider did you buy your phone from there, Scott?
I can't remember.
That's good. Scott's such a seasoned presenter. He would never expose the inferior quality of that carrier, right? But
exactly.
Hopefully no one remembers. Oh, that phone number's height is showing up right there. Someone could do the research on that. They'd find out. But we can see it's very easy to add a person in with a PSTN phone number, right? So all we need to know is the phone number. It's very easy for us to go ahead and add that person into the conference. Hey, Scott, did you fix the internet access issues at your hotel?
Yeah, just came back up.
Awesome, awesome. So I'd like you to go ahead and, you know what? You don't have the conference coordinates for this because it's an ad hoc call. I'm going to drag you back in with your with Link, and we're going to see if we can escalate this to video. Sound good?
Okay.
Talk to you
Sounds
soon.
Good.
Mr. Gillies, do you also have a webcam there?
I do.
Awesome. So we're going to find Scott Schnoll. This time we're going to drag and drop him into the conversation rather than... I can drag and drop him into the conversation. The left click would help there instead of the right click. And I can very quickly drag Scott in. We'll see it's very easy to establish that signaling channel. Here's Scott's
audio. Hello again.
Welcome back, Scott. Wow, hey, I like your carrier. Oh, you must be using Microsoft Link this time.
As a matter of fact, I am.
I really like the sound of your audio. It's crisper now that you're on a live connection. Let's go and add some video to this call. So it's easy, right? I click on the video button. I will start transmitting video. I will notify the other endpoints that I have started a video call. And so then they'll have the chance, and you can see that theirs are coming up as well. Right now they've both joined via video, but both of their videos are not transmitting. This is the point of the Hollywood Squares we talked about earlier. In Link, we have peer-to-peer video, or what we call active speaker switching. Sorry, we also have video conferencing, but we'll only have, not just peer-to-peer, we'll only have one video stream active at a time. So my video stream is active because I'm the person doing the talking and having the audio quality in this session. But if I stop and Robert or Scott starts talking, we'll see it switch over to their video stream. So Scott,
I'm
you there?
I'm going to start talking first so I can take over from Robert.
Hey.
Hey, everyone. Hi, Tech Ed.
Hey, Scott. How are you? Good to see you. You there too, Robert? Can you do some tapping?
I am here. How are things? Your hair's looking wonderful, by the way.
Thanks, Robert.
Hey, so is yours, Robert.
So is that beard. Robert and I have done some sessions together, and they call us Jesus and Colonel Sanders. When we get that in. Now, what you're seeing is Robert left on the screen because since I'm the active speaker, I'm going to leave the previous speaker on the screen, right? So I don't need to see myself talking as I'm going through. I can see that in the lower corner. But we'll see here the previous active speaker for the current speaker. So the current speaker will see the previous speaker. Other attendees will see who the current speaker are on that screen. If I wanted to see Scott, Robert, and myself in parallel, at that point, I'd have to go to a third-party solution or a dedicated hardware MCU. And that would actually allow us to mix multiple video streams, have all of those video streams come back to each participant in the call, and show that Hollywood Squares-type experience. For example, right now, Scott might be on mute, you know, watching TV in his hotel room or doing something else, but we have no way of telling that because we only see Robert's video and Andrew's video up on the call today. All right, so we see what the video looks like, but the interesting piece, I feel, or the one that we use a lot, right, is this concept of sharing. So Scott or Robert, would one of you guys be able to bring up a Word document or a spreadsheet or something and share it out with us, or do a screen sharing, for example, and show us what you have on your desktop right now?
I've got a, I'll share my desktop.
Excellent. And so So I'm right now, I have a 1024 by 768 resolution screen to throw it up on the projector. Robert, I'm assuming you have a much higher resolution than that. Is that correct?
It appears to be 1920 by 1200.
So he's significantly higher than what I have. Let's see, though, what happens when I accept Mr. Gilley's screen sharing request and show it on my smaller resolution screen. So you can see we keep the audio call up. We've added another modality now. We can see that Robert's sharing, Scott's already connected, and mine is in process connected to his desktop sharing session. When you do that, and we'll show you on my side as well, right, you have the choice of primary, secondary monitor, et cetera, one application, the entire screen, real estate. But we'll get that screen sharing experience. So here comes Robert's desktop. Oh, look, I can see myself talking over there. And he's got a OneNote up with his background on there. But it's a little hard to see, right? Obviously, he's got a much higher resolution screen than I do. But I can very easily go into full screen mode down here and bring up Robert's screen, full screen, where now it becomes almost legible, even though we're scaling that down in size. This obviously is much clearer if the participants are using similar screen sizes, but our goal is to actually take that even if not everyone's using the same screen size and you have someone with that netbook or smaller screen type experience. So I can actually read your screen there, Robert. Looks like you're working in OneNote there. You've got a task list you're going through. Something around some exchange escalation team doing the EEC testing for exchange virtualization. But looks like you've got a lot of unchecked boxes on your task list.
That shows how far behind I am.
Are we keeping you from all this?
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right. So you see what the ad hoc experience is, right? Any of you have any questions on that ad hoc collaborative experience that we're showing right here? We started with an IM conversation. We added some audio. We had a participant drop because of the internet access. We added them back in via our cell phone. We added video to that session and eventually came up and had a screen sharing request as well to show all the different modalities and how simple it is for the different participants to join. So this is ad hoc. Let's go ahead and actually show you a little bit of what that scheduling is like. So Scott and Robert, I'm going to go ahead and drop this call, and we're going to send you guys a calendar invite for a scheduled call. So we'll talk to you guys maybe in 5-6 minutes.
Okay.
Sounds good. And I know you got to go by in 10 minutes, right, Robert? So we'll try to hurry up on the on the invite for you.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks. Anytime. So there's our call. We'll go ahead and hang up. We drop the screen sharing, and we'll close that call. Whew. Demo one is successfully completed. Always feels better when they work, especially if I these rumors of internet issues. So that's the ad hoc experience. Let's talk a little bit about this concept of the scheduled experience, right? So in the scheduled experience, what we're going to do is actually go ahead into Outlook and create a standard meeting request. Typically, when I'm scheduling a meeting with people, I do it via Outlook. And so therefore, we've added the link add-in for Outlook itself to allow us to schedule these meetings very easily and make that a collaborative meeting versus just all of us get together in a conference room. So I'm going to invite some people. I'm specifically going to invite Scott Schnoll, Robert Gillies. We'll have this discussion on tech. Let's see, wave 15, some secret planning, right? Location right now is blank. If I had a conference room, I could select that if I was meeting with some people in there. But I want to make this an online meeting. I have right now two choices. I have online meeting, which is going to schedule this on a Link MCU. That means that the meeting experience for video would be limited to active speaker switching. We'd still have audio mixing, we'd have IM, we have desktop sharing, the other functionality. We wouldn't have the Hollywood Squares. The other piece to this is that the Link maximum supported meeting size today is 250. We tested up to 250 concurrent participants in a meeting. So this is not a maximum number of attendees, right? So you've got 250 people contributing IM and or audio and or video and or app sharing in a single meeting instance. That is not we believe with current shipping hardware, might go higher than that. You're welcome to do your own testing. But when we shipped Link last fall on the hardware we had tested and published out on TechNet, that's the maximum meeting size before we started to see a degradation of that meeting experience. Some of you may have larger meetings than that. You may need to have a 500 or 1,000 person type training event or an all hands company broadcast, for example. And so you need a capacity greater than 250. You'll notice also that I have the live meeting service. So at Microsoft, we allow people to schedule a meeting using our hosted infrastructure for live meeting, where we can do significantly higher meeting sizes. We can go into 1,000 people, for example, there. We can also have things where someone sets up and runs the audio, everyone default is on mute. Some of those other larger meeting type solutions are options. If, for example, I had the Polycom integration here, I could click on a Polycom button up there and I would schedule it on a Polycom MCU. Now I would see people. Now when people join, I'd get the Hollywood Squares type experience. And so our partner solutions will be listed up along the top tab. That will impact where the meeting is hosted and therefore what the meeting outcomes are. We have heard feedback that that may be confusing for end users, so our goal is to try to simplify this going forward. But if you buy Link today, this is what that meeting experience would look like. So let's go ahead and click on online meeting. When I do that, Outlook actually starts talking via CCCP back to our Link infrastructure. And it's going to set up the meeting coordinates. It's going to say, there Andrew will host a meeting on Wednesday 8/3 at 9 o'clock a.m., right? And it's going to be on the Link infrastructure. It puts in the join experience for a phone participant. They'll get a phone number and a conference ID. That's my conference ID. You'll also notice that my conference ID has a URL. Mine is JQ03DLS9. That's my default conference ID. I can put that on my business cards or in my email signature. Anytime somebody clicks that and I click that, we'll be joined together on an audio call or a video call, whatever we choose, back on the Link infrastructure. And so that meeting ID is unique to me as Andrew Aronson. Every time I click online meeting, I'll get the same meeting ID. That sounds great, except that once in a while, actually somewhat often, I'll have a back-to-back meeting where there are two separate topics, two groups of attendees, and the first meeting runs long, or people from the second meeting join 5 or 10 minutes early. If I have the same meeting URL, that means that those people, either the future participants are joining my current meeting, or my current meeting participants are running into that future meeting because they left their PC, walked away without stopping or closing the meeting out. So when I have things like back-to-back meetings, I'm going to need a way to customize what those URLs are, or have a specific join URL per meeting. I also may want to do things such as determine who's a presenter and who's an attendee, who can join the meeting by default, who has to go into the meeting lobby first, for example. Maybe I know that inviting people from Australia, I'd also like to make sure that the Australian phone numbers are listed in that session, right? So we have these different things we may want to change in the meeting experience. For that, we now have the Meeting Options button. I click on Meeting Options, and I have the choice to customize what the access and presenters are for this specific meeting on my calendar. And so when I click that, once I click that, even if I don't change any settings, you'll see that the URL, JQ0, just switched to 7SYS7JVC. So now I have a new unique meeting being scheduled at 9 to 9:30. If I had an existing meeting going from 8 to 9, people would not get this new URL. The people will be in separate lobbies or a separate meeting type experience. But let's go back into meeting options again. And we have, first of all, who's going to get into the meeting, right? So is it just the without waiting in the lobby? And because Scott and Robert are both Microsoft people, our default access, which is everyone from my company, right, they're going to join without going into that lobby experience. We could invite people outside of the company as well. They could be federated. They could be just an end user. I could invite my wife, who does not have a link or OCS infrastructure nor any federation, into a meeting with her Hotmail address, right? She'd get the join link. She could either join via the Link web app and just come right in with a lesser meeting experience, we'll talk a little bit about later, or install the Link attendee client and have access as a presenter with being able to share her screen or do video conferencing or other pieces like that. So I'm going to say organizer only, goes without waiting in the lobby. And who's a presenter? In this case, I'm also going to change that to organizer only instead of people from my company so that Scott and Robert show up as an attendee, not as a presenter inside of this meeting. You have other options, right? People dialing in by phone. Maybe you want them to bypass the lobby. Is it everyone, people outside of your organization, for example? But basically, who's automatically going to join? And who should I make a presenter versus make an attendee? I also have choices for the phone numbers, right? So in this case, we've got gateways all over the world, so we can have people dial in locally from any one of these locations. They will join, or they will call on the PSTN to that local gateway. That gateway will transcode it to RT Audio or Siren. That will come back to our Link infrastructure and be mixed for all the participants. We'll leave that on. I could also turn on entry and exit announcements if I wanted to. That would ensure that when people join the call, it would play their name. If they join as an authenticated user, we will play their display name in the GAL using text-to-speech. If they join as a non-authenticated user, we'd ask them to record their name for that session. So let's see, organizer only and organizer only. Let's hit OK, and let's go ahead and schedule out that meeting request. Oh, and I might have lost Robert here. It's pushing up on 9 a.m., but we'll have Scott for sure. What we have here, though, is another change inside of Outlook. So not only did we give you the scheduling option, but you may notice right here this Join Online button. In the past, you had to go ahead and I'd see my list of appointments. I would open one, find the URL, click on the URL to join. It would launch a browser, redirect a link, and I'd get that join type experience. But I had to take a few steps once that reminder popped up. In this case, it's right there. I can very easily just go and click on Join Online, and I will be taken to that meeting, which we set up and hosted on Link. So I can see that. Ah, Robert's there. What are you doing there? I think you told me he had to get going. So let's admit him quickly. You can see I also had the choice to admit all. But hey, he's not on via audio or IM yet. He's coming in. He's on mute. Hey, Robert, I know you're headed out. So I think you're just about to leave us. It looks like you're on mute.
I've been chatting right away.
Hey. All right. So you're bailing, right? You got to head out and take care of some stuff?
Yep.
All right. Hey, thanks for participating in the demo. We appreciate your time.
Did you get anything? Did you get everything you needed?
We sure did. Appreciate that.
All right. Y'all have a great day down there and enjoy Tech Ed.
Thank you. Take care. And we see that while Robert and I are having that conversation, right, somebody else has joined. Scott's also out there waiting in the lobby. I can either admit them with the yellow bar that's kind of surfaced and is highlighted, or I can click directly on the attendees and go ahead and admit them in this case. So, hey, Scott. Oh, he's not on yet because I can see he doesn't have audio. But and he's on mute. And if let's say that Scott is non-technical and doesn't know how to mute, I'm going to actually go ahead and unmute Scott. And now Scott is live with audio. You there, Scott?
Nope.
Hey, Scott, you in the call? He's probably fuddling with his mute button, going back on mute.
Oh, sorry. I'm so not technical. I did not know how to unmute myself.
Were you offended by my assumption there? We were using that as a demo highlight point. We understand you are not a salesperson and clearly know how to operate.
How does this newfangled stuff work?
All right, so that's pretty interesting, right? So now we hear the audio quality. Again, this is a conference, so our audio is going back and forth to Redmond. So you say, well, that's good. Both of you probably have very high-speed internet connections. Let's see what happens if we add some latency or some packet loss into this session. First thing we're going to do is go to our 2014 test tools. We have a nice little tool called Link. It ships in the I've already got it installed, so we can just go ahead and launch it. Newt ships in one of our Visual Studio SDKs, but Newt allows me to do things like take my network connection and on the inbound and outbound packets, do things like introduce some loss. So I can do periodic loss, I can do random loss, We're going to set up a little ping session here. So they have lots of bandwidth. We like to chew that up on occasion as they're a competitor. let's go and introduce some random loss, right? So we'll introduce 10% packet loss outbound, 10% packet loss inbound, and see what that sounds like. So this is my incoming traffic, okay. Outgoing traffic, you can see there, random loss, 10%, okay. I'm going to go ahead and create a filter. And when I create a filter, I'm basically saying, what network do I want to apply this to? I'm going to just leave it at all. I could pick just my wired connection and close. And I'm going to turn on tracing and start my packet loss. Now, when I do that, we should start to see some drop packets eventually. Coming up. And if I go to traffic monitor, I can see my loss rate. And then I can see the loss rates around 10% or so, 5 to 10%. We're just seeing some random loss in there, right? But Scott, hey, how's your audio?
I'm just kidding. It's great.
Yeah, so you're sounding pretty good over there. But you can see that our network monitor, right, went from gray over to yellow. So a 10% packet loss, we really don't see much of an interruption in the service. That's inbound and outbound audio. Maybe like count to 10 or something for us, Scott, so they can hear what you're, to see if there's actually any of your voice packets being dropped out.
Sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Very, very clear. Actually, that sounds so good that we're going to try to make this connection a little bit worse. So let's go back to our configuration, go back to our link, and not just have some error or a loss, let's introduce some latency as well to this, right? So we know we have some latency already, but let's add another, 200 milliseconds of latency. We'll add 150 each way. And above and beyond what we had with Australia here, right? Oops, that's loss. I want to go back to random loss and keep that at 0.1. Latency for outgoing, another 150 milliseconds. And I can see down in the bottom right, my latency right now is around 50. But when I hit OK here and go ahead and restart that, we should see that latency go up on the next packet interval. Yeah, we're seeing some more drops here. 56, why did my latency not go up? Did I not hit 150 on incoming? 150, oh, there it go. Oh, yeah, there it is. Sorry, I was looking over at TTLs. Yeah, latency went up, thank you. Look, I thought it was around 50, and I looked back. But you can see that it went up to 317 milliseconds. Thank you from the audience for pointing that out. You can see the 1718 to now we're over 300 on the ping. And significantly higher because we already have latency from Australia to Seattle. Hey, Scott, could you do that count to 10 again for us?
Sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Very clear still. Let's go back and add some
more
loss.
Yeah, so are you.
Yep, I hear you. Let's put 20% loss there, right? So we're going to go to 20. We lost some of the loss, that's why. That's 0.20 on the outbound. So we were down to about 5% there on the last one. So stop, tracing's on, start, go back to our traffic monitor. And Scott, you want to go ahead and resume that count again?
Sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
And we see we went over to red, but we're still with forward error correction, right? We're able to extrapolate and put Scott's conversation back together, even though we're seeing quite a few drop packets on that connection. To show you that it does sound worse over time, we're going to go back and make it even worse again. Let's go to a random loss of about 0.3 each way. Stop and start. All right, Scott, you still there?
Yep. You're still sounding very clear.
I know. I'm a little starting to wonder if we're actually why it's working that well at that number of packet loss. Let's go back and,
It's because you're in Oz.
Yeah, the network here is very very robust. All right, half and half?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're seeing significantly higher loss. Our ping has dropped off substantially. Our loss rate is higher.
I can still hear you clearly.
Ah, but we are hearing some. We are starting to hear the distortion now on your side. Can you do that count to 10 again?
Yeah, it's a very small amount. I can still make out everything you're saying.
I hear you. So here we can see the number of packets being lost on the ping. We hear Scott's conversation, but you're actually hearing a conversational quality to that, right? I'm not having trouble picking out what Scott's saying in each of those words. So you want to do one more quick count to five for us, and we'll just see what that sounds like?
One, sure. One, two, three, four, five.
And so I don't know if you could, in a session later this week, we'll do the network quality with Link. We'll actually show you how and why forward error correction is putting Scott's packets back together. Scott's sending double the amount of data right now, or double the audio packets, right, to help address some of that packet loss, or double the payload size. And we're taking the future packets, putting them back, and extrapolating that information to restore his quality. But you can see there that a significant degradation in our network quality, our actual call experience was quite good from the end user perspective. Question? Ah, yes. So the question is, can we bring that back down to 10% and try with video? So that's an excellent question, and we'd love to do that. And we must have hired you and planted you for that. we have a plan. So let's go back in, and we'll take that back. Let's say, how about 20%? We're comfortable with 20. So we'll do 20% and add a video to this experience. So stop, start. Should get a little better in terms of audio, but let's go and add video back into this session. So Scott, you're okay bringing video back on?
Sure, absolutely.
You're still dressed from the waist up, correct?
Oh, from the waist up, correct.
And my video, it took a while, as you noticed, to start, right? We're seeing a lot of packet loss even on the signaling traffic going back to Redmond. But
hey,
here's my video. You there, Scott?
Yep. Hi, all.
You have to do a little bit of talking to switch to you. Oh, there we go. So can you
It's a little bit of choppiness in the video, but not too bad.
Can you wave your hands and show us some of the ghosting there that's going to take effect? Yep. So you can see there that some of those iframes are being dropped, right? We're seeing substantial packet loss from that video experience, but and some pauses there at 20%. Looks like we froze for a bit as we lost an iframe. But we're losing 20% of outbound packets. And we don't know when you're
happening.
Being silly and when the screen is...
That's not me doing that.
The screen is free. You know, you look better with packet loss, Scott.
Okay. Thank you, Jesus.
All right. So there's that video experience with a significant degradation of that of the portion. So, all right. So now you see peer-to-peer video. How many of you want to see what the room experience is like where we start to integrate with a VTC bridge and show the Hollywood Squares type portion? Ooh. So before we haven't done that, we'll turn back on the loss, but we're going to turn off loss for now as we start that experience to show you what HD video would look like on a good network. So let's come back over and stop our loss. So we jump right back to good pings at 20 to 50 milliseconds. All right, Scott, I'm going to forward you a video bridge, and we're going to have you join that and have you join us with our Hollywood Squares there as well. So the way to do this is to right-click the URL I'm going to send you, or the link contact I'm going to send you, and right-click and say start a video call. So Michael has sent us one of the Polycom bridge URLs, right? So we're going to send this over to Scott Schnoll. So he has that. I'm going to then go ahead and close the call with you, Scott, and we'll see you on a different bridge here in a couple of minutes.
Sounds good.
All right, take care.
See ya.
Bye. So if I go down to Polycom, I can see two things. First of all, they give us a list at Microsoft of about four conference rooms around the world which are running a Polycom HDX endpoint. I can, as a user, right-click on one of those. We know in Central, it's afternoon in Central time. So if I start a video call there, we should see some daylight in the background. But in this case, I'm using my Link client, and I'm talking to a Polycom HDX in Chicago. All right, so this is overlooking in Rosemont here. It's looking out the window. It's not the best view.
There we go.
There it is. So it's looking out the window in Rosemont at Chicago. No one's in that conference room right now. We'll be able to add them in. But we have a video call being established that easily with a room endpoint. So it's very easy from a Link participant point of view to connect to a conference room full of people without knowing their IP address or some other miscellaneous information to make that connection. That Polycom HDX endpoint is also talking RT video back and forth, so we have both native link signaling and native link media flowing back to a link audio video, in this case peer-to-peer video, sorry, so I'm just going from my endpoint directly to that Polycom HDX. More interesting is when we mix this on a Polycom mixer.
So yeah, this is actually hitting an entry queue on the RMX, and we've got a few people that are actually dialed in. And down on the showcase, we've actually got one of our room-based systems dialed into this call, and fingers crossed it works. But we do have, and you'll actually see yourselves
Welcome
in the call.
Welcome to Unified Conferencing.
And so I'm now joining an existing video conference, right, on a Polycom MCU. If you guys wave, you can see you're down in the corner down there. Especially if you're in the front row. This webcam is sending over the third one down. And we've got some folks over in the booth. They're waving up at the top corner, right? So we can see them waving to us. They are joining the call as well. So now we have the multiple video endpoints all mixed into this video call for us to be able to have send and receive audio, send and receive video.
And one thing to note in this, and I'm happy to pass around my laptop, is the resolution of the PC only goes to only to a certain amount, so it's actually not going to go to VGA or a high resolution. My laptop is actually set for 1920 by 1280, and it's actually in high definition, so the RTV has actually come through. So I can pass it around if you like. But we actually do have this downstairs, and this is a live demo of three guys.
Yeah.
So...
So there's our, if you want that, the room experience, right, whether that room be, oh, sorry, question in the back?
No, not at the moment, no. No, unfortunately not.
The question was, with Polycom room infrastructure, there's a capability for the remote party
firing
to move
camera
the camera
control
at the local side, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a link participant in that call, I don't have those camera control capabilities.
So in this call, you do have the question was in regards to can a room-based system receive the content or push the content? So in this environment, no, because we don't support RDP. But what we do have down on the stand is we've actually, which is part of another slide, another session, is we've actually, with Microsoft, actually got a product called the CX7000. Which is a room-based telepresence for Link. So it's actually a Link user, which you will be able to share content and collaborate exactly what you're talking about. And that is demonstrable downstairs at the showcase.
Yes, which, so it essentially depends on the Polycom endpoint would be the answer there.
But what you can do within this environment, if someone was to push content in a traditional video environment, you would see the content in a Link in that Link call. So you would see just Link can't push a collaboration session.
Okay.
In regards to the continuous presence? So the question is no at the moment in regards to Office 365. Currently, the limitations from that is Microsoft only supports the native desktop link client today. They don't even support their phone edition CX phones. We believe, and it's gone out to the press, that the CX7000, which is a Link device that we've got downstairs, will be able to participate in a online 365. But that will be the way it's... And there is work of putting our continuous presence or RMX core infrastructure actually into the cloud working with Office 365.
And we've got a slide coming towards the end that shows the parity differences between a Link on-premises versus Office 365.
So, and Scott's just joined.
And Scott has just joined as well. So we now see Scott also live on the Hollywood Squares. And welcome to our revised demo there, Scott. So you can wave over
awesome.
To the booth. You can see everybody in the room. These are the people that have been watching you the last half hour, 40 minutes.
Hi, room and booth people.
Where's the other gentleman?
So Mark's actually in Sydney.
Okay.
The top right, he's actually...
Wave back.
He looks like he's about to dial someone on the phone.
Is he around the room? They're not waving.
He was alerted.
He was, yes. He's
that,
sitting in my office.
That
so
randomly
cool.
At some point he would pop up on the screen for a room full of people.
Cool.
Okay, well, thank you. That's concludes our demo portion. Any questions on the demo functionality we showed you? All right, let's go ahead and close that down. Let's thank the people who set up the internet access and our ISP for carrying us through that morning without any interruptions, except for the ones that we caused with our network emulator client to drop those packets. Yes? So two people who make a link call to each other, the media will be peer-to-peer. But when you click on a conference join, it's always on a conference MCU. So when Robert, even though Robert and I initially were just the first two people in the conference, because we clicked on that conference URL, the media path in that case was going back to Redmond. So even though we had two people in the conference, the media flow will be through a conference MCU. Question was, if you have two people in a conference, is that a peer-to-peer session or is the MCU getting involved? MCU would get involved. Question in the back.
Sorry, which
the clients? Question was, Polycom MCU, can a Reach client join that? You mean like an attendee client or a... not from...
Wow. I don't know is the short answer. I'll find an answer for you and get back and like we'll get back to you.
I don't think so because they don't have the buddy list functionality that would be able you'd be able to add that in, but we can double check on that one for you is the answer there. Question.
So just so everyone heard, so traditional video uses H.239, which is a standard for video conferencing to push content. It's a one-way stream. In that environment, if a HDX or a room-based system of traditional video push content, you would be able to see that within the link user as well as any of the rooms.
I think the other piece of that, I think if you wanted to have that room-to-room video, but you also wanted to see a screen sharing session of like what's on the projector, you'd have two conferences. One is the video conference hosted on the Polycom side, and then you'd have a second one that has the projector screen, right?
Yeah.
That people that would join to, they'd be able to see their the web conference or the screen sharing portion.
Did that answer your question?
Pretty much.
Cool.
Yep. Any other questions on the demos? So we've got a few slides. First one, we'll cover the architecture, kind of what's happening behind the scenes as we do that. I've got about four or five of reference, which talk about the bandwidth and codecs required to put on the demo. And then we'll try to wrap up here. We're pushing up on time. So the first one, all of these conferencing components now can be co-located on the front-end server. You can also choose to break out the AV MCU into dedicated instances, whether those be physical or virtual. is up to you, but you can also co-locate them if you want to have that simpler server build form factor. Two main components are called Focus and Focus Factory. These are responsible for scheduling the conference coordinates, the date, the time, the attendees, the security, and then also for spinning up the appropriate MCU and having that join experience from a user side. We have multiple MCUs that run. If we have more than two people inside of an IM session, that becomes an IM conference and therefore requires the IM MCU. The web conferencing and app sharing MCU to take that screen sharing request and broadcast it out. The join launcher and the web app server for people joining from a web client and also clicking to initiate the conference itself. And new to Link is that concept of the personal virtual assistant and group virtual assistant. If you've got somebody dialing in, for example, to the Chinese conference join number, we can broadcast their information and requests in Chinese for that particular user, even though somebody else might be joining in the U.S. and getting English in their prompts to join that conference from the phone from the U.S. side. An audio conferencing MCU does the mixing of audio streams. Oops, sorry. And an AV conferencing MCU does the mixing of video streams. That could be on the front-end server or that could be separate. That's one of your choices in the design phase. All information for conferences will reside in SQL on a standard edition box. That's going to be SQL Express. On an enterprise edition box, it's going to be a full version of SQL running on a separate box. From a scheduling side, like we said, the Outlook client, right? We click on the conference. Yeah, I see the sign coming up for 10 minutes left. Fortunately, we've only got a couple slides. Scheduling client, you click, you have the conference information. You're able to specify the presenters, the time, the coordinates of the conference. We send that up to the Focus Factory, right? So Focus Factory is then responsible for creating that conference and provisioning it inside of the database itself. Later on, when someone clicks on the join meeting or they dial in from the PSTN to the conference itself, they'll come in and they'll talk to Focus. Focus will then look up the conference coordinates they're attempting to join, validate that their conference ID or that URL is valid for a conference, and then see, are they a presenter, are they an attendee, are they going to the lobby, etc. It will then spin up the appropriate MCUs. So if it's an IM session, right, they'll spin up the IM MCU. If it's an audio conference, they will spin up the audio conferencing MCU. As the MCU is spun up, it will then start transmitting audio or that media stream off to the participants. And so signaling in this case is going to flow up through Focus. The media streams are going to flow from the conference MCU down to the particular client, your voice over IP phone, your link client, your PSTN device that you're connecting off to the conference. So, and I walked through, but it also has the little 1, 2, 3. Come on. We'll just do that since the clicker's out. All the way through. Client details, we have 3 clients that you can use to join these conferences that you set up. There's the full link client, which you can use for ad hoc conferencing or going through. There's the link attendee client, which is for someone who's not in your organization or someone who's not running link. They can join by the attendee client. They'll have that functionality listed there. And then finally, there's link web app, which allows someone who doesn't have either the full or the attendee client installed. They're able to join but have a diminished conference experience, which is here, right? So here we show all the different things you might want to do in the conference, followed by from which client type you're going to come in on, what your supported conference capabilities are inside of that conference. Question?
So the community kind of Mac client's
still what, sorry?
It
does not have the full functionality yet compared to the full link client. So we are aware that we're basically enhancing our Mac capabilities over time, but that's what you have if you buy it today. Those are your capabilities from the client perspective. Question was, Communicator for Mac doesn't have that full link client capability from a conferencing perspective, which is accurate. Video. The piece to video here, like we said, we highlight the concept of desktop or peer-to-peer video or adding that video to a conference experience. The main difference is that we've added in, as pointed out, right, we call it HD, but essentially 720p video support from that end client. So we're able to mix in a desktop video stream into one of the a third-party MCU to get the Hollywood Squares or join an existing conference room. What you will notice on video is the client hardware requirements. As you step up in the number of pixels you're transmitting, you will step up in the amount of hardware required to actually encode that video codec as it goes over the wire. And so for HD video, we're saying the desktop machine needs a quad-core processor to be able to encode it fast enough to keep up with what's being captured by the camera. Voice over IP and video bandwidth requirements. So here's our list of our codecs that would be used. If you're looking at doing planning around codec sizing and data on the network, we have an excellent session on network quality coming up. I believe it's on Friday. I'll double check that at the end here as I have some more time if you have any questions, where we'll walk through what, how and why we come up with some of these numbers and what the differences are between the actual audio payloads versus bits on the wire, when use things like forward error correction, when not, for sizing your network, questions on diff serve and quality of service and other network aspects. Video is going to be significantly higher. There's a minimum and maximum because it depends on what's changing on the screen. If Scott's staying static and just moving his lips, we're transmitting that lip movement as he speaks. When Scott does his little head shake side to side, we're going to see a lot more changing on the frame. Therefore, Scott's bandwidth rate is going to go to the upper range of what that bandwidth rate would be for video versus the standard. Conferencing details. We have a quick one on ACP. On-premise audio conferencing is going to address, we feel, most of your audio conferencing needs. We tend to see an ROI for orgs that spend a lot on audio conferencing in 3 to 6 months sometimes, from what it takes to put up a link infrastructure, connect it via SIP trunk for an 800 number or toll-free number to dial in, and stand up your own hosted audio conferencing service. The investment in link is relatively small from a server perspective. You can do that on one box if required, right, depending on your use case and usage characteristics. SIP trunk is relatively inexpensive, and then you cut out that monthly cost for your conferencing experience you're paying for a third-party provider. online ACP conferencing. With Link Online, we have the capacity to leverage an existing audio bridge provider. That will allow you to have that larger conference experience from an audio perspective, leveraging Link Online. We don't have any plans to extend the on-prem version to be able to add a third-party audio conferencing or ACP bridge provider to Link on-premises. Web conferencing is also interesting from a bandwidth perspective. This has two impacts. One, what is your resolution that you're sharing out your screen at or sharing out the application? The more pixels, the higher the bandwidth. But two, it's bursty. We only send that change when your screen changes. So if you're just modifying a Word document or a PowerPoint, when you're changing those characters, you'll see very low bandwidth in terms of the throughput on the line. When you refresh your screen, such as you minimize the document or you bring up another application in the foreground, we have to send that entire burst of pixels across. You will see a spike in utilization as that occurs. Manageability, we've done, you're laughing. We did a lot of work to improve your operations. We have the synthetic test commandlets, which essentially allows you to run a commandlet that emulates an IM session, emulates a conference, emulates an audio call, right, or a video call, for example, and then reports back if that failed. And so instead of just monitoring server health with event log metrics and memory utilization and processor utilization, we give you the capability of testing live transactions, reporting back on the success or failure of that transaction, and then alerting you when that transaction has actually failed in that environment. For troubleshooting, we pointed out the call quality notifications. Our goal there is to surface back to the user the capability of what worked or didn't work, the network conditions. So if we see packet loss or a degradation of the network, we want the user to know. But we'll also capture all of that in our call detail records. We did a monitoring session last year where we showed you what some of those call detail records reports look like and how you can use that for the troubleshooting package. The other one is the concept of client logs. It's sometimes difficult to capture what the problem is. We have collect logs at the client. Person hits that button. It will zip up all the client logs, and they can then send that off to us for a more robust diagnosis of what was happening at the time. The call notifications, as we call out, also has this little, I didn't show you in the demo, but a learn more hyperlink. You can customize that to go to your intranet, for example, instead of the default office.microsoft.com location. And in there, we have a whole variety of things that we'll pick up. Some of the common ones are two laptops in the same conference room, both joining the meeting. We will mute one of those once we pick up that, as we detect that, before the feedback loop starts and we start to have that issue. So a quick list of all the events that will surface out. The deck is available for download if you're looking for a copy of it as well to go through this one. Call detail records. We've also talked to the SQL reporting team, created a lot of custom or higher end reports for you out of the box automatically. So you have a much richer capability for surfacing call or audio issues out on the network. I told you at the end there'd be a table of what's on-prem, what's Link Online. Here's the capabilities today. Feel free to pull that down and take a look. The big ones are the ACP provider is only available in Link Online, as we had mentioned earlier. So that's it. Thank you for coming out for the audio, video, and web conferencing. Hope you enjoyed the 45 minutes or so of demo that we're able to give you. Like we said, thanks for your participation. If you have any questions, we'll take them after the as we settle down here, but thanks again for your time.